Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll conclude our conversation on creating high-performance teams. Well, Andy, as we wrap up this conversation around the four essentials for creating a high-performance team, I just want to encourage all of our audience that wasn't able to hear last month's podcast to go back and hear it if you haven't. But just for context, how about a quick review of the first two essentials?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. In fact, as we mentioned last month, I actually identified these four essentials for creating a high-performance team after observing our organization doing something it does really well. It was a Sunday where I didn't have any responsibility. It was several Sundays, actually. And I just visited our campuses, sat in the traffic, got in the crowds, watched children being checked in. And again, in our context, thousands of children, thousands of middle schoolers, thousands of high school kids. I mean, a very, very complex multi-site church organization. And I walked around just being proud of our volunteers and our staff. And then it dawned on me, you know, this works so well, but I'm not sure why. If it were to break, I'm not sure I would know how to fix it. And in all of organizational life, there are always driving forces. This is true of relationships as well. There are always driving forces. There are things that drive things that make them work. And if we are not aware of what those are, we can make decisions whereby we undermine our own success. But in organizational life, we may not know it for months, weeks or months. You know, you realize, oh, no, things aren't going as well as they did. I wonder why. So I decided it was, as the leader, it was important for me to understand why what was working so well was working so well, because if you don't know why it's working when it's working, you will not know how to fix it when it breaks. And so that started me on this journey. So I came up with a list of eight things or nine things that I thought were critical to creating high-performance teams. Took them to our leadership team. We talked and talked and talked and talked and, you know, narrowed it down to these four things. So last month, we talked about the first two. The first one was to select performance-oriented people and position them for maximum impact. And by that, we meant recruit doers, not thinkers. Mm-hmm. And again, we said it's not that we're against thinkers. It's that we're talking about teams, and teams do things. And on a team that's going to do something, you need people who are oriented toward action. It's much easier to educate or help a doer get smarter than it is to activate a thinker, to get a thinker to do something. Again, these are just personality traits, but it's important to, you know, understand that when it comes to putting together a team where people do things. So, and then in addition to that, make sure people are where they need to be to make their greatest contribution to the team. Your organization, as we said last month, will always be at its best when team members are doing what they do best. Right. In fact, our organization is at its best when I'm doing what I do best. So that's true for all of us. So that was the first one, to select performance-oriented people and position them for maximum impact.
And Andy, you said the second one is to clarify the what and why.
What and why really are the fuel for high-performance teams. Here's what we've come together to do. Here's why it's important. And why is where people find their inspiration. Why should this problem be solved? Why should this task be accomplished? Why should this product be developed? Why should this opportunity be leveraged?
Andy, last month, one of the benefits you pointed out to clarifying the what and why is that it can lay the groundwork for organizational change.
Yeah, the best place to begin any conversation about change is to talk about the future. What could be, what should be. So as a leader, my responsibility is to make the leaders in our organization a little bit discontent with where we are by painting a compelling picture of where we could be, maybe where we should be. But you can't do that if people aren't clear on what we're here to do and why we're here to do it. So again, all these things are super critical when it comes, again, to creating high-performance teams.
Andy, in a talk I heard you do recently around this idea, you connected the idea of clarity to influence.
Yeah, and this is such a big topic, Lane. We should come back and spend a whole podcast on this. But clarity really is influence, and influence really is leadership. I mean, when it comes down to it, that's the equation. The person in the organization who has the most clarity will be perceived as the leader, whether they have the position or not. I mean, we've all been in discussions where there was just fog and somebody made a statement or walked up to the whiteboard and it was like, you know. And as soon as somebody brings clarity into an environment or a discussion where there's a lack of clarity, they are perceived as the go-to guy, the go-to woman. I mean, that's so there's a vital link between clarity, influence, and what is leadership? I mean, leadership is influence. It's an intangible. Wow. Yeah. It's a metaphysical thing. You know it when you see it. Mm. You know when it's, you know when there's a vacuum. So so the clarity around what and why, again, it's just not a cool add-on. It really is essential, especially for a high-performance team.
Well, Andy, that brings us to the third essential in creating a high-performance team.
organize to the what?
And this is so difficult, especially if an organization's in transition. So the third one is organize to the what. That is, once a team knows, here's what we are here to do, then you have to make sure, we have to make sure that the organization supports the energy and supports the decision to accomplish this what. And everybody listening, all of us have been in situations where we felt like we were competing with the organization. We knew what we were there to do. We even knew what we were hired to do. And then we found ourselves having to navigate organizational complexity to do what they're paying us to do. Well, the problem was they may have been clear on what they hired us to do, but the organization wasn't organized to the what. So in organizational life, we have to create an organization where the lion's share of time and resources are allocated to that specific what. And that's our responsibility, once again, as leaders or division or department managers, to be able to go to supervisors and say, hey, I know what you've asked us to do, but the organizational structure as it stands, we're having to compete with it. So, you know, we need the flexibility to reorg, not just for the sake of reorging, but to reorg around the specific what. If you don't do that, there's just tons of sideways energy. People are frustrated and leaders are going to leave. The people who want to be productive, who are on these teams because, you know, they were excited about what and why, they just leave because after a while, people get tired of competing with their own organization.
Andy, this actually reminds me of the conversation with Cheryl Batchelder on the podcast when she came to Popeyes. And one of the ways that she got them to organize around the what was to unfund the things that weren't organized around
the what. She said that they had like 130-something initiatives that they had been working on. And this was people's livelihood. It was their jobs to do these initiatives. And yet she got there and said, this isn't the right what. We're not working on the right things. But, you know, people had time and energy and around those things. So she said, I finally just started defunding them, and then people quit doing them.
It's amazing when the money goes away, the energy does too.
Reward what you want repeated. And again, it comes back to, again, creating an organization that is organized to the what. One of the ways that we address this, as I mentioned last month, is we ask new employees what they see us doing that they feel like is off purpose. You know, we're all about mission and vision and, you know, fresh eyes. They say, yeah, I'm all for the mission and vision, but why do we do this and why do we do that? And we've all had, I've had those awkward moments. In fact, when I get the 3-month evaluations, I find myself thinking, wow, that's a good question. We do this because we've always done it. We fund it because it's always been funded. We fund it because it's fun. You know, there's lots of, but again, those are the kind of gut check questions to say, are we really focusing our resources and putting our best people on our best opportunities? And every organization gets a little bit fat and happy over time. So that's normal. But again, we're talking about high-performance teams. And if there's going to be a high-performance team, there has to be an organization that is organized behind that team to facilitate their success, not get in the way of their success.
Well, Andy, that brings us to the fourth and final essential for creating a high-performance team, and that's orchestrate and evaluate everything.
Yep. Orchestrate and evaluate everything. The orchestration terminology came to us from Michael Gerber in his extraordinary book, The E-Myth, and The E-Myth Revisited. And now I think there's about 8 editions of The E-Myth. It's a book about franchising. It's one of the first books that we read together almost 20 years ago, believe it or not. And this terminology stuck with us, that everything needs to be orchestrated. Orchestration answers the question, this is how we do it here. This is how we do it here. Orchestration, it brings consistency, predictability to processes. And in our case, it brings predictability to our environment. And orchestration, and this is something we had to convince folks of in our organization, orchestration actually makes an organization feel more, not less, personal. So orchestration, as he says, eliminates discretion or the choice at the operating level of the business. But you marry these two ideas. You orchestrate and evaluate, orchestrate and evaluate. This is the way we do it here. But within the rhythm of the organization, we are going to evaluate everything. If you just evaluate and don't orchestrate, you don't have predictability. If you just orchestrate and not evaluate, you don't get any better. When we looked at high performance teams and said, okay, what makes them so good? They evaluated, but there was a sense of predictability. So I think when you marry these two things, it's an extraordinary dynamic. And again, I think it's what you find on every high performance team.
Well, let's move on to this idea of evaluation then, because the essential says orchestrate and evaluate everything.
Yeah, evaluate everything. You're never going to lose by evaluating. And so you have to evaluate formally and systematically. In other words, it needs to be built into the rhythm of the organization. It can't just be anecdotal. You have to evaluate with the people who are involved. That's the only way that, you know, people get better. And you have to evaluate things just about as often as they occur. I mean, how often do coaches make their teams watch game films? After every game.
Every game.
Yeah, every game. And what happens if you do this the right way, and many of our listeners, you've got your own system for this, is it you create feedback loops that keep you close to critical events. And as an organization grows, all of us grow further and further away. The organization essentially pushes us further and further away from the critical events. Mm-hmm. Growth distances leaders from the events that matter most. And that's unavoidable, but it's also dangerous. So if we're not careful, all we ever do is look at spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And everybody listening knows numbers do not tell the whole story. Right. And one of the unavoidable realities of leadership is as the organization grows, we get pushed further and further away from the performances that matter the most. Mm. And we end up just looking at spreadsheets all the time. And then, of course, you know, information gets filtered as it makes its way up the org chart. And again, these are just organizational realities that are unavoidable. But what it means is that when it comes to evaluation, leaders have to figure out a way to have input into and get information from what I would refer to as the critical events, the things that matter most to the organization. In fact, one of the questions I think every leader needs to ask every once in a while is, what are the mission critical events in your organization? What are the things that are the make or break? And is there a feedback loop that keeps you tied into those critical events regardless of where you are in the organization? A lot of our listeners remember those fantastic conversations we had with Frank Blake from Home Depot. And he said, you know, for Home Depot, the most important event or the most important performance is between the customer and the associates on the floor. Mm. So how does the CEO of a Home Depot with 300,000 plus associates, you know, create a feedback loop from headquarters to what's happening on the floors of the on the floor of Home Depot's? Well, he figured it out because he knew I can't just look at spreadsheets. Spreadsheets just don't tell the whole story. So again, what are the critical events? How are those events evaluated? And how do you get that information in a way that makes you part of the evaluation process? That's the challenge for leaders.
Andy, talk for a minute about how you've created a feedback loop that has connected you to the critical events of our organization.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. For us, the critical events essentially happen on Sundays, generally Sunday mornings, and they're at multiple locations. And obviously, I can only be in one place at one time. So I have three direct reports that, you know, are our management team. But the management team, again, they're three or four levels away from, you know, the critical events on a Sunday as well. So what I did is I gather every Tuesday morning for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, the key people who were, you know, ground level, if I can use that terminology, every weekend in the events that matter most. So that's my meeting. I set the agenda. And primarily what I want to do is I want to hear how we did and exactly what happened. Like most organizations, we have lots of numbers, lots of data, lots of ratios. We look at all of that. But again, you know, those numbers don't tell the whole story. So every Tuesday morning for 2.5 hours, all of our lead pastors from our campuses, the folks that oversee children, middle school, high school, about 14 of us, and I just call it our leadership team. And it's my opportunity to get a snapshot of what happened and what, you know, I call these critical events. Now, that's, I can do that because we're all, you know, 20 to 40 miles apart, and we can all drive and get together. The other reason I set it up this way, and everybody listening gets this, essentially, you'll have to figure out your own method of doing an end run around the org chart to make sure you know what's really going on. So that's what that meeting is for me. There are people in that meeting that report to each other. I handpicked them because this is my way of evaluating what happened this past weekend. It goes back to what I said earlier. Whatever's happening needs to be evaluated almost as often as it happens. So again, it's orchestrate, evaluate.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for this. As we wrap up this conversation, do you have any final thoughts?
Sure, a couple of things. First, if I was hearing all of this information for the first time, I would feel like somebody just gave me a big homework assignment. In fact, I may feel like I must be a failure as a manager or leader because I'm not doing any of this stuff. And that is not the case. So to take it down to the essential element, if you are working on a team and you want it to be a high-performance team, there are things you have to do, and perhaps you're already doing all of these, and this is just our way of describing what you're already doing. Because remember, this discussion began not with me trying to fix something. I was observing something that was working really well. So I think one of the big takeaways is if you work with a team that's a great team. You enjoy it. The people enjoy it. It's not that you're conflict-free, but you seem to work through the conflicts. It's just a great team. Perhaps your takeaway from these two podcasts isn't to do what I've suggested as much as it is to do what I did a few years ago. Just look at your team and begin to take some notes. Why does this work so well? Document it and then teach it. Because again, if you don't know why it's working when it's working, right, you will not know how to fix it when it breaks, and you won't be able to replicate it anywhere else. So again, these are our four takeaways. Of course, I think they're true of all high-performance teams, but these are just my opinions. But if you're working on a team that's really a great team, figure out why, document it, and teach it. If you're on a team that you would say, you know what, it's not a great team and we are not very high performance, then perhaps these four observations are things that you can begin to embrace and begin to leverage in your own context. And again, the four are: select performance-oriented people. You know, you got to find doers, not just thinkers. Number two, clarify what and why. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? Then organize to the what, organize accordingly, and then orchestrate and evaluate everything. Because at the end of the day, a high-performance team, high-performance teams are comprised of people with extraordinary clarity around what, why, and how, along with a strong predisposition towards execution. So when you find those people, when you organize them correctly, and when you lead them correctly, you'll get more done.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for today. And to all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us and invite you to the new andystanley.com website, where you can find our new Leadership Podcast application guide to go with today's conversation. This application guide, found under the podcast tab, includes key takeaways from today's podcast, questions for reflection or discussion, the resources we've discussed, and more. So be sure to check out andystanley.com today.